Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Hi, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we are learning from Keegan Benowith. Now, Keegan is a bassist for the band Poster Boy, and he's also an events organizer through the company Reverberate. If you've been a part of the Durban alt scene, the rock scene, over the last couple years, you've probably seen Poster Boy play, and you've probably been to a Reverberate gig. Hell, they played like 100 gigs in their first year together. So those kids have been busy, man. They've been putting in that work, and for the most part, it's been paying off. They've acquired quite a large and loyal fan base. And yeah, man, it was cool getting to chat to Keegan about all of it, because I'm fucking old as fuck now. I'm turning 37 next week, and you know, I'm not as in tune with the scene. I'm not as in tune with what's going on the ground when it comes to the band scene and stuff. So it was really cool to get to chat to Keegan and hear things from his perspective, hear things straight from the mouth of babes, as they say. And yeah, it turns out the Durban music scene is kind of the same as it's always been. Like, there's ups, there's downs, there's a lack of support. Like, there's always just that struggle to get crowds to consistently come out and stuff. And we get into our perspectives on what makes it so difficult to create art and music, and from my side, comedy, and have it supported by the general public. And yeah, we dissect it a little bit, both from my old head perspective and from Keegan's more youthful perspective. But yeah, man, this is a dope chat. We hear about the touring, we hear about working with David Birch, who's like a legendary fucking producer and really cool get. Like, you know, for an up-and-coming band and stuff, to be able to work with someone like that is really fucking dope. And we also hear the story of Huck Auburn. If you're in Durban, you probably know the name Huck Auburn. But we find out just how that came about from someone who was there when it happened. And yeah, Keegan's someone who's been in the music scene pretty much his whole life. His dad's into the music scene, would take him to Splashy. His dad's friends into music. His friends, you'll hear. You'll hear for yourself. I don't need to tell you everything that we're going to talk about, but that should whet your appetite. And I guess now's a pretty good time to tell you that this podcast is brought to you by you, or at least someone similar to you. Someone listening to this podcast is paying for it. If that's not you, it can be. If you go to patreon.com/almostperfect, and you can sign up for as little as $1 a month. That's like 20 rand a month. That's not even a beer. Like, it's like half a box of smokes. Is this podcast not worth half a box of smokes to you? Come now. Come. Open thy wallets. Open thy hearts. Fuck, I don't know, man. But yeah, you know the deal. patreon.com/almostperfect. You can also go to almostperfect.co.za. You can buy some merch. There's t-shirts, there's sweaters, there's mugs. And yeah, you can also just donate money via the Zapper code over there. And what else do I gotta tell you? Not much, actually. Not fucking much. My life is hella boring at the moment. You know, I'm just chilling at home, reading and writing for the most part. No arithmetic. Actually, there is some arithmetic. I definitely do a lot of fucking maths and stuff when it comes to not quite right finances and everything. Especially because, yeah, at the moment, we're busy saving the money from all the gigs we do so we can come up to Joburg on the 30th of March at the Bioscope. We're going to be doing a whole tour with the whole Not Quite Right crew. So that's myself, it's Carmony, it's Akil, it's Vinny, it's Tibbs, and it's Liam, who you've all heard on this podcast. And it's going to be hosted by Richelieu Benoit, who actually was like in one of the first 10 episodes of this podcast and is a definite Durban legend. But he plies his trade up in Joburg these days. And so I was like, hey, man, like, you free? You keen? And he was like, hell yeah, dog. So that's going to be a fun fucking gig. I think that's really going to be great. That's something I'm looking forward to. I think that's something we're all working towards, like, as a crew at the moment now. It's just to try and come up to Joburg and have a really good showing, you know. Get our names out there a little bit. So if you're in Joburg around the 30th of March, come on through. Tickets will be $150. You can get them from the Bioscope website, and that should be very soon. So that's all I've got to share with you right now. I'll catch up with you after the interview. Here it comes. It's the Almost Perfect Podcast with Keegan Benoith.
Cool. So how are you living, Keegan?
Yeah, you know, or as good as it can be in KZN and in Durban. But yeah, everything is going well, all ready for a new year, 2024.
Yeah, shit, I was wondering when the, you know, Durban Apathy would finally get to you guys, because, yeah, you're part of a band called Poster Boy, you're part of an events company called Reverberate, and, you know, you've been trying to make shit happen in Durban for a while now, and I assume it's a bit of a struggle at this point.
Yeah, you know, in the beginning, there was a lot of passion and energy from everyone involved. Reverberate is mainly me and Simon, and so is Poster Boy, Simon being the front man of the band, and yeah, things were very exciting in the beginning. You know, you're first starting out playing shows. All of a sudden, people care about, like, something that you're making, your art. And that gave us a lot of passion. And as the years have come by, you know, things have gotten a lot tougher. The shows, it becomes harder to grow them. And in general, just the attitude of all these people in Durban and them being so bummed out about everything, it gets to you, you know.
Trust me, I know the deal, because, like, I'm someone who for years, like, would constantly, like, put on gigs and book against the apathy and just be like, you know, if you build it, they will come. And for a while, you know, they did. But it's weird, like, I think there's also just a cycle with everything in Durban where, like, you got like 2 years max for, like, anyone to give a fuck.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's quite surprising to see places like Origin that are still going and still thriving, you know, while the rest of the clubs that have been around, you know, are kind of gone. But it's part of the Durban culture, I guess.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, Origin's outlived most other, you know, dance music clubs even. Like, there's many that have come and gone. And I think it's because they actually have learned to adapt and evolve. And, like, they're playing I'm a Piano now, you know? Like, if you had told me, like, they'd be playing I'm a Piano or GOM, like, 10 years ago, well, not quite 10 years ago, even, like, 5 or 6 years ago, I'd be like, at Origin? Nah, bro. But, like, they've actually, you know, they've got something for everyone. They've got, like, 5 fucking dance floors. They've got, like, a variety of DJs. Not for me, typically. Like, I'm not, like, super into it or whatever, but, like, I at least appreciate that there is a place that's, like, got a bit better, like, music than something like 80s, you know? So
100%.
Yeah, but it is disappointing and depressing that Durban, were you around for stuff like the Winston and that?
Yeah, for the later years. One of our first gigs was actually at the Winston the weekend it closed down.
It's funny, you're like the second person that's like mentioned to me, like, starting around that time, like, another comedian started, like, just after the Winston died, and it was like, wow, that's the worst time to start doing, like, anything in Durban in terms of live entertainment. But do you guys also find that there was, like, because of the death of these things, a bit of a gap for you guys?
Yeah, well, I would say during COVID-19, a lot of the previous people that were in the industry were forced to give up their dreams because they needed money, you know. During that time, you couldn't operate as a musician or maybe even a comedian besides online. So I think after COVID-19, when the Winston reopened for a couple of weeks, you know, that was when everyone was wanting to do anything, you know, just get out the house, no matter what it was, experience something new. And I think that was a huge advantage of the timing of when we started our band and when we got out there originally.
But you guys also had to find new venues.
Yeah, that was tough. When we first started off, we started with a drummer called Cam from Black Math.
Yeah, I've heard of him. And episode 50-something.
Check it out. And despite Cam being obviously, like, in the scene for many years, we still didn't have very many avenues to play gigs. And the one and only gig we did play with Cam before he moved to Cape Town was actually at a preschool. It was a birthday party at a preschool with, like, a bunch of kids and a bunch of teachers. And yeah, that was our very first show. And
how the fuck did that come about?
Yeah, I don't really know too much of how it came about, but one of the bandmates' friends' mom heard some of our music and really wanted to.
And thought this is good for the kids. This is good for you.
Yeah, yeah, and it wasn't terrible, you know. I think it was quite cool to play for people that aren't necessarily like punk rockers listening to a punk band, especially for our first show. It gave us a lot of insight.
It's showed you who your target demographic is. I mean, but that's also the thing. You guys, I mean, you're not as young anymore, but like you're still young. And like when you were starting, how old were you guys?
So we started about 2 years ago. I'm 25 now.
Yeah.
Simon, he's 23, so he would have been just 21. And one of our first drummers, Josh, he was only 19, 18 when we first started playing last year.
Yeah, no, so that's the thing. Like, I realized, damn, these kids are young, but like you were doing stuff that a lot of bands hadn't been doing or still aren't doing, and that's like putting on, you know, your own gigs and everything like that. What inspired you to do that? Was it just a necessity thing, or was it, is there a business mind behind any of this?
Yeah, so myself personally, I've always been a natural entrepreneur. My father is an entrepreneur, and before I joined this band, I was actually studying a BCom in law.
Okay.
So I was very like clued up on how to engage in business practices.
Do you know licensing and publishing stuff or not so much?
Yeah, I'll see if I can remember. Maybe I might have to pull out a textbook or two, but I think we could definitely help you out there.
No, I mean, I'm talking for you guys, like, you know, for your own music and stuff. That's got a bit of a useful...
Yeah, I would say it definitely helps. In terms of licensing and publishing, that's something that we haven't really gotten around to. At the moment, we're kind of stuck up on just recording our music, you know. Playing live is something that comes very naturally to our band, but recording it is something that's we haven't really had a lot of experience with yet.
And do you also worry about, like, you know, cementing a song down and this being the final version that everyone knows kind of thing?
Yes, yes. I think I definitely, out of the group, I'm a perfectionist and I might be holding us back a bit with that aspect. But in general, you know, being in a band is tough. We all have jobs. Some of us are in university and we have gigs. We have interviews like this. There's a lot of stuff going on in our lives. And it's all cool to plan out a recording session. And then sometimes, like, I don't know, maybe I made a couple mistakes on my bass. Maybe Simon did a squeak here and there. And one small thing really sets us back. And we just want to redo it and redo it until we get it perfect. Because at the end of the day, we just really want to create quality art for our fans and the people that want to engage with us.
Fair enough. But then, like you're saying, you're a business mind. So you guys wanted to start, you know, doing gigs and shit. Like, how did it all start?
Oh, yeah. So with the gigs, I guess pretty much we had that preschool gig, and then Cam unfortunately decided to move to Cape Town. He had some great opportunities there.
Yeah, I think fortunately for him.
Fortunately for him and for us too, because we found other amazing drummers that are like our drummer now, David. He's really cool and we're blessed to have him. But yeah, going back to how we started the live shows. So after that preschool show, we got a new drummer and we practiced with him and we really tried to find gigs in every way, shape, form, or possible. I phoned every person in the music industry that I knew and I begged them to please give us a show. But because we were very like punk and hardcore, especially when it first started.
More yelling.
Yeah, much more yelling. There was no opportunities given to us. So I guess I told the guys like, listen, I can't get a gig in the next few weeks. Let's just do like a house party. It was our old drummer Josh's birthday. So we said, let's do a party at your house. And we had a party. We didn't charge entrance. It was all just our friends and family. And it went great. You know, everyone had like a really cool time. So we said, well, let's do this again next month, but maybe charge like a small entrance and like maybe sell like some t-shirts and some booze. So we made some t-shirts. We bought some booze and some voice rolls.
T-shirts on your third gigs are quite ambitious, though. How did that come about?
Well, fortunately, I work for a clothing company.
Okay, so you got that inside track there.
Yeah, and because of that, I was able to get some t-shirts and prints on them for relatively cheap.
I mean, because I've been wondering about that, like how you guys, like I saw your logo and knew your name and like stuff from just people around town before I think I'd ever seen you guys like play. So, which was pretty impressive for like a really young band, you know?
I think a lot of musicians are very excited about their art, but especially new musicians, they may not want to put themselves out there and they may not be confident to really just tell everyone about what they're doing, and they're more excited to play music than to try and get people interested in the music. And like, as much as we love playing music, we still want to share our art with people. And fortunately, Simon has amazing branding and marketing skills.
Has he studied at all? Or because like, also I've noticed that, like, always doing the Instagram reels, always like, yeah, you guys, you know, promote your shit.
No, Simon is amazing. He's got such a great charisma and personality. And when we first started the band, it was actually like 50-50. Me and Simon couldn't decide who was going to be the front man.
Sure.
And
the, yeah, the Pete Wentz, Patrick's like stump, like that hammer.
Exactly, exactly. And the decision was made because he was much more charismatic for him to be sort of the face of the brand. And at that time, he was actually in university studying graphic design.
Okay, that makes sense.
So that worked out perfectly. And he immediately started working with Cam, who was also a graphic designer.
Yeah, who's fucking one of the best artists in the country. And you can still get work from him for cheap. So hit him up if you need posters. Trust me, you're going to get the best fucking posters in the world if you chat to Cam, and they're reasonable.
Yeah, he's really a talented dude. And yeah, Cam actually came up with our original logo with Simon. They discussed the colors and everything. And
yeah, the bright pink's a bit of a choice. How did that come about?
Yeah, pink was a choice. We wanted something that was different from other rock bands. We didn't want to be like sort of put into a box just because we were a rock band, and to be like, everyone always wears black. And in Durban specifically with the metal scene, there's a certain connotation when it comes to being a band. So we wanted to be more inviting, especially to women and the LGBTQ community. And yeah, we just wanted to appeal to a broader demographic and make sure that people outside of the alternative scene in South Africa could be exposed to the alternative like side of things. Maybe even in small little bits, not too much, because you know there's very much a negative stigma over the past 10 to 12 years surrounding the alternative music scene and how people receive it in general.
I mean, I think it's also because the alternative music scene is not necessarily always the most inviting. Like, you're talking about metal in Durban, which is one of the, if you don't fit in, it's fuck off. Like, it really is. You know, if you don't have like the scraggly chin beard and you're not wearing like a Megadeth t-shirt, like, why are you here watching, you know, a guy with a drum machine and another guy shred? You know, like, it's, I don't know. I've got my own issues there. There's amazing musicians and stuff, but like, that scene, personally, I've always kept a little bit of a distance from. But I feel like you guys kind of started a bit of a revival of a thing that like I grew up with, which was like a punk and alternative scene that was like, I mean, you guys were almost, to me, like a new version of The Otherwise. I don't know if you ever knew them with Greg Allen and stuff.
I don't think I saw them.
So they were like, yeah, they were a Durban band who got pretty popular like around the country. They were on the radio and stuff like that. And like, you know, they had like, when they came up, they had a young audience, and they brought, you know, girls and stuff to the show, which also does not happen at metal gigs. So that was something I kind of noticed when I watched you guys. I was like, oh damn, there's an audience here that's actually, yeah, like, it's diverse, and there's actually like girls in the front row, which is not something that always happens at punk shows.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's something that's very important to us. Yeah, one of the things that we really focused when we first started the band was to promote ourselves through paid social media metrics. And one of the focuses on that marketing was picking people that were younger, because although there's this sort of stigma, like worldwide stigma, that younger people are more interested in DJ doof, music doof, yeah, and doof doof stuff. And we were obviously quite young, some of the band members being 19, and we realized that there was actually like a lot of people that were interested in alternative music, especially in KZN, but they really had no avenues to be exposed to it. These were people that were too young to go to the Winston.
Sure. I mean, there's no such thing as being too young to go to the Winston.
Or at least their parents wouldn't let them go.
Fair enough.
And then all of a sudden they come out of COVID-19 as adults, now finally being old enough to drink and party, and they weren't able to see any live bands because there wasn't very many opportunities. And this was something that we were really passionate about, giving them the opportunity to come and experience live music. Me, I was very lucky because my parents were into alternative music and they took me to shows since I was 1 year old. So I was always exposed to that, and it was something that I felt the people of KZN in general needed.
Yeah.
Especially the youth.
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know. It's a lot of factors that have created that vibe where there's, yeah, just not as much opportunity or not as much of a scene when it comes to it. I mean, I think it's from venues like breaking down and stuff like that, but it's also funding for festivals and also certain festivals booking philosophies that don't necessarily open up those avenues. But yeah, what was your guys' booking philosophy essentially for these gigs? Because you put on a lot of young acts as well, but obviously you need to bring in some acts that actually draw. Like, you can't just like, you know, be like, hey, he has all these cool like friends and stuff, and then people look at the poster and they're like, why the fuck would I go to a gig where I don't know anyone?
Exactly, yeah. In terms of like, yeah, so most of the gigs that we put on were with Reverberates, which is the events company, and that basically started because, like we were speaking about earlier, there was no events around and we needed a platform to showcase this to Durban. So when we first started off, I mean, it was very much me just picking out the local bands that I did know. Our first show, South Wolves, were the headliner.
Oh, cool. From Toti.
Yeah. Shout out South Wolves. Shout out Joel, who the drummer actually has drummed with us before. And yeah, we played a splashy last year. But basically, you know, I had seen them before and they were one of the few bands that I grew up in Hillcrest that actually came and played in Hillcrest. And that was astounding to me. So yeah, I wanted to see them again. And they were the headlining band along with other acts like Sons of Shem, who we had just seen them, do amazing in the scene. And then after getting those two sort of established bands, we decided that we should give the rest of the opportunities to new people. People that were maybe from different genres, to give a broader audience like a chance to enjoy themselves, and people that maybe were not able to play at other shows. Someone like, I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but Gutsluts.
Oh, yeah.
Who maybe plays music that might not be accepted in pretty much any other realm. But the most important thing for us was diversity. You know, we live in a country that's full of different types of people, you know. There's people that are interested in rap music and rock music and pop music. And largely these people interlink on a every day. They're working together. They're friends with each other. And instead of them engaging in all these subgenres of music, they're all really just engaging in electronic music, which is often a combination of all the different genres anyway. So what we did basically was just combine all these genres into one show where people could come and experience new things, like Gutsluts, the death metal with pig squealing.
Yeah.
And yeah, different guys playing with someone like South Wolves, who's more of an indie band.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, I think it's always kind of been like the Durban way, you know, like, because it's also, if you do just book three punk bands, you're only going to get the 10 like punk fans that come to the gig. So it's almost like necessary. Whereas like you do look at like other cities and stuff, you know, in Joburg, there's like hardcore and punk shows still to this day. You know, you've got like that lineup's going to be all fucking, you know, drop D basically. Mm. Like, you know, like that's the vibe. You know, in Cape Town, you can go to like multiple genre nights where it's like it's all the same throughout. Whereas Durban is one of those places where forever it's basically been, you know, like your lineup is going to be fucking mixed. And I think that's what does actually help bring in a diversity of people, and it also helps expose people to new things that they might not have necessarily known that they really wanted. Also, it makes things just become the thing to do. So even if like you're not into it, like all your friends are going, so you're like, oh fuck, I might as well go try that thing out.
Exactly.
Yeah. But how's it been since then? Because like I said, like the first year of you guys doing this, it seemed like everything was popping off, and then nowadays like you're doing fewer gigs and that. So what's the situation?
So when we first started off, we had Josh as our drummer.
Yeah.
And like I said, he was 19 and he was very excited to play shows. So I think we did close to 100 gigs in 1 year. That was our first year. And it was very tough on everyone involved.
Yeah, for your first year as a band, that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, but it definitely helped us get tight as musicians.
Well, 100%. That's why you do that.
Yeah, we learned how to operate on stage and we're now comfortable. I feel like there's no problem that can arise that I can't deal with or that I haven't dealt with before. But obviously that wasn't feasible for our mental health to play that many shows. And on top of that, we realized that...
Especially not in South Africa with the band fees that you're getting.
Exactly. like mentally and financially feasible. But basically, we came to the conclusion that we couldn't necessarily play in Durban every single week because obviously everyone was going to get over us after a few weeks. So we decided to last year, although it took us a good 3 months to find a new drummer after losing Josh, and then after that drummer that we found, Joel, he also had to move on, and we went through about like 3 or 4 different drummers before we settled on.
This is the Durban Dave. Struggle as well. It's always been a thing. Like any drummer in Durban plays for like 5 bands. I mean, Cam even started drumming like because you know it was like I could just do more things. I could be in like 20 bands.
Exactly. Yeah, and yeah, that drummer, the drummer thing, definitely set us back. And then once we did find like a permanent drummer, who's Dave, who's amazing. We didn't want to. Like,
he's also a youngster, right?
Yeah, he's 20, 21. And we didn't want to like play too many shows and not be able to record. So we spent like a good, like the later portion of last year, 6 months, focusing on like recording our songs and getting some demos out. And in the later part of the year, we met up with another Dave Birch.
I know Dave Birch. He did, City Boy Mazes.
He's done the City Boy Mazes. He was the producer of the Parlatones. And
oh, yeah, those bands too.
We've been working with him ever since to, yeah, sort of create some great music.
Shit, what's that like? Because, I mean, I can imagine that would give your music a bit more pop sensibility.
Yes, and that's something that we really want to push, especially in the first couple of singles that we want to put out there. South Africa... There isn't a large music.
Yeah, you gotta have that 3 minutes verse, chorus, verse, like outro. Like.
Yeah. I mean, we have quite a diverse set. We have about 3 or 4 songs that are more on the indie side, more of the rock, pop, indie side. And then the later half of the set gets very hardcore and punk rock. So we're just going to be focusing on releasing the more chilled songs first. And those are the ones. Those are the ones that we want Dave Birch to produce because he definitely has that vision for. How to make a radio hit in South Africa.
Yeah, that's definitely something. Like, I mean, I've seen the process myself. Is he still out there, like Bluffside or Yellowwood Park? He used to be at that area.
No, he's actually moved more towards town now.
Okay.
Yeah, there, Bill Buchanan side, around that area.
And what's that process actually been like? You know, is he hard on you? Is he easy on you?
He's actually really, really nice. So our drummer, David.
Yeah.
His dad was in a band called Squeal, which is Dave Birch's.
What? He was in Squeal? I didn't know David's dad was in Squeal. That's fucking cool. I'm on a chat to his dad.
So, like, we've been blessed. They're very close family friends, and he's just been really nice to us. And he's been completely understanding of the fact that, like, we have such a strong vision for our song, and that's why we've been taking so long to record it all, you know? Right now, the song Hometown is almost, like, complete. It's probably like 85% complete. We just need to re-record some vocals, add in some piano, and then we're going to be getting ready to release it and promote it to everyone.
And that one's a song that's obviously evolved over time because that's like a big crowd favorite. So how has it evolved over time? Like,
well, funny enough, when we actually started this band, it was just myself and Simon. We just met at a jam through a mutual friend, and we decided that we wanted to continue jamming together. And me playing the bass, he said, I have a couple of songs like ready, you know? And Hometown was one of those songs that he had before, like I even joined the band.
Okay.
And, you know, it started off just him playing on the acoustic guitar. And then slowly Cam added in the drums and the bass. And the song stayed in one form for quite a while after that as we taught the new drummers. And then last year we decided that we wanted to sort of spice it up a bit and just work on new things. And we spent about 3 or 4 months playing the song live in different iterations and variations.
But that was the thing, I noticed that. So like each time I heard it, I was like, that's a little different.
Yes, yes. And we sort of experimented and we've come up with like a really cool sounding song. And we're just super excited to share it with everyone.
Okay. I think we got a little distracted there from, like just talking about the current state of things. you're playing fewer gigs than that because of the drummer and stuff like that. But how, like now that you've been back, how have things been? Because I mean, I remember, you guys went on the Bull or whatever, but like I went to the ATFN gig and I was like pretty surprised how there just wasn't as many people there as I thought were going to be, you know? Mm. And that's happened a few times now over the last year or two when I go to like a rock gig or something. And I'm just like, wait, but like 2 years ago, there were, 200 people like for similar lineups. Mm. And it's like, now I'm like, where the fuck is everyone?
Yeah, you know, when we first started off, everyone was getting like a lot of people at the events, not just our event company, other companies like Rock City were also packing out 200 people on the same night that we would have that. And I guess as things progressed, a lot more people started to throw gigs throughout Durban. And at some points, we sort of oversaturated what was going on. And yeah, I guess from there, we haven't been able to fully recover again. So there was sort of like a post-COVID boom and then another decline. And a lot of this comes through to the bands in Durban that aren't necessarily working together. They aren't working against each other, but they certainly aren't helping each other to build big crowds and work to make sure that they don't oversaturate venues with shows in 1 week or...
Yeah, like just discussing things between each other, being like, cool, we'll do something this weekend, you guys do something that weekend, and like, yeah, then you're not competing with each other kind of thing.
And that is something that we have been working on as a community. There's a joint calendar. If you are an event planner in Durban or you're in a band and you just like to throw a show, you're welcome to contact Reverberates or Poster Boy, and I can add you to this system. It's a joint calendar that all the event planners and bands are welcome to join. And basically, we set down the exact date that we would like to plan a show. And just as a courtesy, other event planners will most likely not plan an event on that day.
Unless you're the other side of town or something. Like you can do something at Aces and, you know, the Verb or whatever. Like
yes, that's, of course. Yes. Yeah.
Most people aren't going to make that drive.
And we're not going to really shout at anyone or cause any problems if you do plan an event on the same day. But it's just as a courtesy so we can see as event planners and hopefully work together to build something. But, you know, on top of that, there is also like another problem, which is the fact that the venues which we've been working with and planning events at haven't been very supportive of the musicians and the bands, and they haven't exactly made it financially viable for the event companies and the bands to play there.
Okay, that's a whole fucking thing. I mean, but I could maybe make the same complaints about previous venues that have existed here who I've spoken very nicely about. You know, like I got the door, like that was the money that, like, you know, you got to work with and you got the venue and stuff. But yeah, so how has that been? Like, have there been, like, what is it, just door deals or are you paying for rental?
Yeah, I mean, we don't get charged for rental per se, but yeah, many door deals.
And your guys sound rig in that is that Rafe's or like,
that's all of ours.
Is that yours?
We personally invested, myself and Simon, into the sound. And yeah, it was cost us a lot of money. We actually didn't really make a profit with Reverberates because we're constantly getting broken cables, broken mic stands, broken everything because the musicians don't really look after the equipment very well.
Yeah, I mean, this was also the problem at the Winston. Everything was broken because, well, who do you think did it? Musicians come and they're like, oh man, this is so fucked up. It's like, yeah, it was you last week kicking over the fucking mic stand.
Yeah, so, no, it can definitely be difficult, but... one of the eye-opening things was now that we are a bigger band, we are able to travel and on tour to Joburg and Cape Town and across the Garden Route.
I was wanting to get into this. It's like, yeah, as a touring band, how is it?
And to compare the venues there and the differences between like the way things work financially, you know, there in Cape Town and in Joburg, there are plenty of alternative venues that solely make their money off of bands and alternative music.
Like Smoking Kills and shit like that.
Yes, and Sonage, and in Cape Town there's countless others. But in Durban, there seems to be a very negative stigma that this isn't possible. And when people do try it, you can tell that these businesses aren't operating very efficiently. A business like the Winston, you know, as amazing as it was and how cool it was, any business owner would look at the model there that they have and it's not very hard to see what they can improve on.
Yeah, hopefully Maddie's not listening to this, but I tend to agree a bit. And I think they'll agree with you that they definitely could have tightened some things up in some aspects. And like I think that's always been a bit of a Durban problem. I mean, even Burn and like Live didn't always pay bands well. I mean, if you were like a proper headlining act, you know, you'd get like 20 grand. And if you're the opening act, you got 500, you know, like...
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. Like, I think that's, you are right there. But I think, like, when you do look at it, like, places like Smoking Kills and Joburg are always busy. Mm. Like, you go there on a Sunday night and it's packed, you know? They've got, like, DJs and stuff like that. And so, like, I think they do have a more consistent income. And bringing bands in there, they know people are going to come. Whereas in Durban, it's like, you know, you tell a band like, oh, we can give you 10 grand or whatever. And then, you know, they draw 50 people and that doesn't cover like at the bar even, you know, you're doing like.
Exactly.
So I don't know. It's a tricky one. It's also like, have you guys worked with sponsors at all? Because I know that's an avenue, but like it can be a mission unless you really know people.
So we have worked with some basic sponsors, nothing serious, but one of the reasons being is that the venues that support live music in Durban aren't doing great. That's why they're opening their doors up to the alternative bands. And really, in order for someone to get an alcohol sponsor, not at a festival, but just at a normal local show, the venue needs to be doing well. And then the alcohol companies give them budgets to increase their sales and promote. But the venues aren't necessarily doing well, so they don't have any sponsorship budgets. And on top of that, they are offering, like we said, a lot less than what you would get in Joburg. One of the most surprising things for me is that a bar like Smoking Kills is really nothing special. It's just a dive bar.
Yeah.
And there are countless dive bars throughout KZN. Not the only one that really offers alternative bands an opportunity is the Vern in Howick.
Which is in fucking Howick.
It's in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, we don't really need a fancy venue, especially for punk shows. All we need is a dive bar with cheap alcohol and space for a stage.
Smoking Kills is just like a more Instagrammable the Winston, basically. That's how I see it. It's like the Winston with someone having an aesthetic idea here.
Yes, and this dive bar thing, it's essential for a music scene to have a very small, cheap, low-cost venue that can operate for the smaller bands so that we can grow those smaller bands. And then on top of that, you know, once there's a cheap, small venue, we can open up a more classy one and growth from the bottom up. And in Durban, it seems to me like all the dive bars here, most of the venues and the restaurants are all targeted towards demographics of people like 35 and upwards.
Yeah.
People that have money.
Apparently.
And yeah, it's really impossible for us to find a venue that isn't set in that way and doesn't believe that the only way to possibly make money is for every restaurant in the whole of KZN to target the same demographic with the same exact entertainment.
And almost the same exact menu. Let's not even get into that because, yeah, fuck. There's a lot of places you can get the exact same fucking food in Durban and it bugs me. I'm just like, where's the creativity? Where's your heart, man?
Like, and on top of that, they're going to have the same singer-songwriter artists.
Yeah.
That guy's going to be at all the venues.
Doing the same covers. Like, you know, not even doing their own music. It was so funny. Like, seeing Splashy put on their thing of like, oh, 75% original music. I was like, that's not a lot. Like, that's not, it should be like 95. You do like one or two covers in your set. Like, that's just my personal thing. I mean, do you guys do covers? I think I've heard you do one.
Yeah, we do a couple covers. We are playing, actually, so I shouldn't be announcing this, but we are playing at some festivals this year. And some festivals don't necessarily want us to play our like hardcore punk music.
Sure.
So because of that, we'll add in a few more covers, something that people will recognize a lot better. For us, we love covering Nirvana songs and like the Pixies, anything from the 90s is really.
Yeah, so they'll go down well.
Yeah.
So yeah, what are your guys' influences?
Nirvana, the Pixies. Personally, I love Red Hot Chili Pepper, the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Flea. Simon is a huge Beatles fan.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I can hear, I can hear that. I definitely can't hear the bow, 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 bow,
bow, bow. Well, yeah, as the bassist, I can only do so much, you know.
I know, it's weird you saying like Flea, and I'm like, yeah, you don't necessarily have that going on, which is to me a good thing. I'm not like a huge Chili Peppers guy, but I mean, different strokes, different folks. And then, what else?
So Simon definitely has like, me personally, I've been in the alt scene my whole life, so I don't really know much about pop music, but Simon, he has three sisters.
Oh, cool.
So he's known a lot about like
pop music. He knows Charlie XCX.
He knows all of those guys that I have no clue about. And yeah, when it comes to David, the drummer, he's much more into his classic rock stuff.
Okay, that also makes sense considering his dad.
Yeah, he's into his Led Zeppelin and John Bonham and so forth.
Oh, that's a big fucking drum.
Yeah, huge drum sounds.
Okay, fair enough. So how's that process of writing songs together with, you know, you guys having some similarities, but also like that's all very different sounds?
Yeah, it's been interesting. One of the cool things is that Simon does most of the songwriting, you know. He writes them on guitar and he writes the words and the guitar parts. And then he brings it to the band and then me and the drummer will just play. There isn't really much talking that goes on. You know, we might say, can you play less there or more here? But it's really just a natural thing that happens. Not too much talking. And yeah, between me and Simon, we usually work out the exact like vibe of a song. I might even tell Simon, like, I think one of our songs, Cycle Through the Pain, I told him to write a song for a specific band. Like as an exercise, songwriting exercise.
I mean, this is like for TV writing or whatever. You write a spec script basically of like, you know, you write a Friends episode to show people like, hey, I can write a Friends episode kind
exactly.
of thing.
And we were on tour with a band called The Tazers.
Oh, yeah. I know some of them, yeah.
And they had this really catchy song. And I was like, Simon, bro, you have to write a song like that. And then he came back and he showed us the song and it was a song called Cycle Through the Pain. And I think one of the only things we changed was I told him not to play in one part, and instead we put piano there. Well, we don't have piano. It's actually, I played on the bass with a synth pedal, so it sounds like
piano. Oh, dope. That's fun. And I assume, like, as you guys have been going along, like, you are experimenting more with genre and stuff, because in the beginning, like, you're, like, you know, three-chord punk, I assume, and now it's, like, yeah, expanding the fucking range.
Yes, for sure. I mean, we're always going to be punk. One of the reasons being that is that, you know, we are limited by our ability. We aren't necessarily a huge technical band. It's not all about fancy guitar solos and shredding like metal. It's much more about making art that people enjoy, you know, and we want our music to be listenable and enjoyable to as many people as possible.
I mean, fair enough, but it's also like, as you like listen to more, I assume your tastes have changed as much as you like, you know, grew up loving Red Hot Chili Peppers and that. Like, what are you listening to these days?
These days, I'm still sort of stuck in the alternative spectrum, listening to Idols. I love
That's fair enough.
Wet Leg.
Fair enough. Like, oh, you and Catherine, yeah, both mentioned there. No,
I just listened to that episode, so it's all stuck in my head. But check that's a great episode with Catherine Arts.
Yeah, no, that was a fun one. But yeah, I mean, I also, Wet Leg's debut was fucking phenomenal. I guess that must also like put some pressure on you a little bit, like where you're like, fuck, that's their first album?
Yeah, it's a bit intimidating hearing about like these people that get famous like when they're really young and their first album. And I guess,
like, I mean, I'm sure you're chasing that though. Like,
I mean, yeah, that's the goal. We wouldn't be in doing this if we didn't, well, not necessarily want to be famous, but we want to like be successful with our music in the fact that we meet our goals, you know, and that's a very big thing for us, is that each year we set ourselves some goals to achieve. And in our first year, we had like some really small goals, stuff like playing with certain bands and doing this, and we like largely excelled those goals, like we knocked them out of the park. And then last year we had very small and simple goals because we didn't want to really overstimulate ourselves and burn out like the year before, so we just had smaller goals and like we didn't really knock them out of the park this time. But you know, we are working on how hard we work, and instead of working too hard on things that maybe don't give us like large rewards, we're going to be working a lot smarter instead.
So the business guy is coming up with KPIs basically.
Exactly.
Oh man, I mean, I know that well, because like, yo, when I was younger, I mean, I did a lot and like I got a lot of shit done, but like, yeah, I had these big goals and would go after the stuff, and like even after you achieve it, you're just like, oh okay, well now what's next? And so these days, like, I'm fully in the whole like, yeah, just set small things and just life will keep carrying on, you know, basically. It's like, you just focus a little bit ahead, and you're not also, yeah, like I always wanted to try do things at scale, and that's how you can also fail, like, yeah, at scale. I guess actually bring that up, like, can we talk a little bit about New Year's last year?
Yeah.
Because that was probably like the biggest failure you guys had, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. In terms of an event that didn't make money, etc.
Yeah, because you had like also brought bands out. So you had like a 2-day lineup and stuff. Like it was like this whole massive, massive thing. And people just didn't show up for it. So what was that?
Yeah, that was quite surprising for us. That was in the period where we were doing events pretty much every month and they were all financially successful. We were getting increasing amounts of customers at each of the events. And because of this, we decided that we were going to build it up to one bigger show where we were going to bring together more artists than like we've ever brought together before over 2 days. I think it was something like 24 different artists.
Yeah. It was like a proper like 2-day festival.
Exactly. Like within Durban. And it's something that, you know, hadn't really happened here for you in a while. Yeah. In a while. And I'd seen it happen before where I'd been to a very similar festival that did great. So
was that like the Winston ones or no?
I remember going to the Alt Fest that Huck Orban used to.
Oh yes.
Used to do, and those were always very well supported.
Yeah. I mean, he's right in there in the scene. Like he's always been just that character that floats around.
I was actually there in the inception of Huck Orban, but we can talk about that later.
Oh, it's splashy.
Yeah.
Okay, we could definitely get that story from you. But yeah, as you were saying.
But yeah, with New Year's, I took the metrics from the other events and I worked out the budgets and I did all the accounting practices as I'd learned them in university and I budgeted and everything. And unfortunately, because we were really busy at that time, Simon had fallen behind with the marketing of the events, and because of the tight budget, things didn't really go great in terms of the turnout of the events. Some of the artists actually pulled out as well.
I mean, that's always going to happen with festivals.
When there's so many artists as well, and none of them are really going to get paid as well as they deserve, that's what happened. And yeah, it was very tough for us to have our first sort of event failure when we'd been doing events the entire year and everything was going great, you know?
I mean, I think, like, you know, marketing seemed relatively fine. Maybe there's more that you could have done. But I also think it's a thing, like, I mean, I learned, like, and I don't do, like, a lot of events in December anymore because it's just too much fucking competition. There's too much stuff happening. There's too many things going on. And what I kind of realized that year for New Year's especially as well was that a lot of people also either want to go like away.
Yeah, specifically that year, that was when the oceans were absolutely disgusting. You couldn't swim at all.
Oh, yes.
So Durban specifically in that year was terrible. I remember going the day after that festival, I went to St. Francis to go visit my family there. And I must have seen like half of Ballito and Durban North.
I mean, so that's also it, you know, people from Durban are leaving Durban at that time, and then people who aren't from Durban don't really know what's happening in Durban, and so they're just going to go to the big, you know, Ballito New Year's or one of those kind of things. So I think, I mean, that's also it. It's like one of those things where you just got to fucking take the lessons from it. Because, I mean, same month for me, like I'd done, you know, gigs for comedy and that, and they were the worst gigs we had done all year. Like at Stump Nose, we had been packing out Stump Nose every single time we did it there. And then, like, the December gig, first weekend of December, was, like, 10 people, maybe 15 people. And it was just like, okay, so next year, we're just not fucking doing this. We'll, you know, plan shit throughout the year. We'll do dope stuff. And in December, we can maybe go on tour or something, you know?
Yeah, and that's the decision that we did this year, which is instead of sticking around Durban in December, we did two shows in the first 2 weeks. And then we went on tour to Cape Town.
Yeah. And how was that?
That was really, really fun. Like, it was, Cape Town is amazing. Obviously, it's a lot nicer than Durban in terms of facilities and the amount of venues that you can play at. But yeah, it was really eye-opening for us to see how many, like, alternative music fans there are there and how, like, the alternative community is just massive. We played at a show at Evo.
Oh, yeah, I fucking love Evil. It's like one of my favorite places like in the country.
And that's definitely going to be up there with Smoke and Kills. It's one of our favorite venues. And we played with an awesome band called Systematic. And we were utterly surprised by the huge amount of like LGBTQ fans that joined the events. And, you know, in Durban, you really don't get people expressing themselves like that. And it's really difficult to find a place where like the freaks can come out to hang, you know?
I mean, that is what the Winston used to be, was a place where like stuff like that crossed over. Whereas now, like, there is, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel almost like there's a lot of gay events, but there's not like a lot of gay and straight events, you know?
Exactly.
Like, there's not a lot of like, yeah, that kind of vibe where you do have queer artists and straight artists all sharing the same stage. And so you've got like a nice mixed audience and that's like, I do think in Durban, I mean, obviously a lot of gay kids come out to, you know, various events and stuff, but it isn't quite the same. Whereas like, if you have like the Pride picnic and stuff like that, there's like, you know, fuck loads of people. And it's like, it's, yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's a weird thing that we don't necessarily have those, I don't know, branches, of, I guess.
Yeah, like,
know?
I mean, I like to think of myself as like an open-minded, educated guy. I try and learn as much about these type of things as I can and be educated on them. But like, there's only so much you can learn and discuss in Durban and different people that you can meet. And just going to Cape Town for one weekend, I was totally mind, my mind was blasted with all the different like types of people and how open they are with the way that they express themselves and their sexualities. Whereas here, it seems like it's a lot less socially accepted.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is. I mean,
yeah.
KZN's a very religious and conservative province. Like, people, that's also the problem with just the alternative scene and stuff like that. It's like, what you're doing already goes against what's traditional and what's normally accepted. You know, you're a devil worshipper if you're screaming so much, kind of thing.
Exactly.
There are still a lot of those old school mentalities that even get passed down to, you know, the youngsters and that, like through these big fucking mega churches and through families and stuff like that. So yeah, the shits in KZN is just a lot more fucking repressed, unfortunately. It's also led to like some amazing fucking artists and music and that. But then, unfortunately, people always like have to fucking leave if they want to. Like, someone like Cam, you know, was doing all this dope shit here in Durban and found, and like, we loved him here, but like, he found like true like success, basically. Like, him, Tyler, Acacia, and that, when Black Math moved to Cape Town, it did like just make everything fucking better for them. So I hate that that's the case, because I think that's also maybe the problem you guys might be facing, like, is
100%.
The audience, like, this is a, we used to joke about this all the time, especially with like the City Bombers and stuff. We would talk about how, okay, so this year, how many people are leaving, you know, from the scene, basically. You're like, cool, so that's 100 people this year, you know, and then obviously there's new youths coming in and this and that, but like, there's just, you can never get that big critical mass because there's always just such a turnover of people leaving.
Yeah. Well, the way I like to think about it is, from a business perspective, I would compare it to like real estate.
Sure.
For instance,
location.
New York has these, they're skyscrapers that are built for billionaires. And these are buildings that are bigger than the Empire State Building that are pretty much completely empty. And basically, these buildings are the most expensive real estates in New York. And these buildings set the standard for the rest of the prices of every other building in the entirety of New York. And if these buildings aren't managed properly, you know, let's compare them to Black Math being one of the biggest bands in Durban. If they aren't like in Durban, you know, if that building is then taken out of New York and that skyscraper is moved to Cape Town, then all of a sudden the highest paid person in the markets has been removed. And the person just below them is now the highest paid.
Yeah.
And what this does is it decreases the price of the entire market, not the value of each individual property.
Yeah.
But it basically inflates the value of money in that economy.
I get what you're saying there. Basically, it's like when the bigger acts leave and stuff, and like, yeah, there's now the next band's not going to be getting the same fees.
Yeah, all of a sudden, this building that isn't a skyscraper is now being priced at the same price as the billionaire's skyscraper. And what that's done is it made the whole money system worth less because the skyscraper isn't as nice as the other one. And what that does is it gives people less value for money. And in this like economy in Durban, where people don't really have a lot of money to go out with, people would rather not take a risk than go somewhere where they might not be impressed.
Which is kind of tragic. I mean, because for me, like, even to this day, I'm still like, yeah, I'll spend $100 and, you know, find out what's happening, kind of thing. But you're trying to sell a 100 rand ticket in Durban to fucking anything that's not some international act is almost impossible, unless it's like Milky Chance at the fucking Botanic Gardens, you know, then you can maybe get some money. But like, yeah, and I mean, like, that's actually like a fair point, because also like a bad like back math, we're playing for like $50. So
exactly.
So they leave, and like now people are like, oh, $50, that's a lot of money for a good band. And then they watch like someone else for $50 and they're like, this isn't worth my money.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh man, that's fucking tragic. But I think it's not just the bands. I think it's also just the audience. You know, people go and study. People go to Stellenbosch. Mm. They go to Rhodes. They go to UJ. They go, you know, all over the
country. Well, like we talked about earlier, this isn't exactly the most accepting place for people that think differently.
Yeah. And like, that's the thing. It does allow you, like, I think it, as I say, like, it does breed creativity. I do think because of those restrictions, like, I think someone like Louis de Villiers, he's like this dope artist, Skullboy. He did like some of the stuff at the Winston and shit like that. That Big Lenny, like from, from Motorhead. Like, he did that and that. And, you know, his work, like, I think grew because he had something to fight against almost, you know? It's like, and it's the same thing, like, I think with the band scenes and with the alternative scenes, it's like, you know, you attract a lot of the same people who are like alternatively minded in that, but then those people tend to leave, and then you're like left there going like, do we suck now?
Exactly. And one of the you mentioned him earlier is Greg Allen.
Yes.
And how he was, he was tuned. I don't know how I say it, but there was a lot of people that would treat him really badly about the way that he dressed and his image and everything in Durban. And since he's moved to Cape Town, there has been no discussion of how he's been treated badly there. So that's just one example of
yeah, but that's like crabs in a bucket shit, because it's like people just see you doing something differently and they like want to bring you down, and like because they don't feel that they can be as free as you, kind of.
The difficult part is that him being in Cape Town, now he's not so special and not so different.
Sure.
And it's probably a lot more difficult for him to make it as a musician there.
Shit, I mean, yeah, I'll eventually chat, so I'd love to. Weirdly enough, we were in a band together when I was 16. So,
no ways.
Yeah, we were called Burning Bush. Yeah, we lasted a few practice sessions, I think, and then
you guys didn't record anything.
Oh god, no. Like, we recorded like 3 songs and they were terrible. It was like White Stripes meets Rage Against the Machine. It was not good.
At least you could say you were in a band with Greg.
But yeah, like, I was also in this one band, like a metalcore screamo emo band, for like a couple practices. It was just my bad. I couldn't get to practice. I didn't have a car, I didn't have everything. I just probably wasn't that very good at vocals anyway. And then yeah, I think Matt Olafio, who eventually owned the Winston Pub and stuff, I mean, he's like an old friend of mine. Yeah, he took over, and then they became like a whole thing. Like, they, you know, people like them. So the Otherwise as well, there was another band that like basically started, you know, I'm starting all these, you know,
just
trends.
To think what could have been.
No, that life was never for me, like, at all. Like, that's, comedy is so much fucking better. It's so much easier. You don't have to, like, you know, collaborate.
Yes, that is the one advantage you guys have.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing for you guys is, like, you get to hide behind your instruments. Like, we're just like, if this sucks, like, I know immediately. Like, the silence is deafening.
Yeah.
Like, you can just turn around and just, like, play to your amp and not have any clue, like, who's, like, standing there at the back with their arms.
Especially as punk musicians, if we got upset when people weren't like enjoying us, then we wouldn't be doing our job properly. Like, it's for us, it's all about getting there and bringing the energy. If I have to, I'm going to jump on that table and make sure you party with me, bro. And I guess you don't really have that option as a comedian. Well, I guess you do have the shock factor.
You can definitely do similar things like that, like Bill Hicks back in the day. And like, there's been a few people who take a similar approach. But yeah, they're very similar, but also very, very different art forms. And just like with, I don't know, I do think you guys have it a little bit easier sometimes. But like in the beginning, I guess. But like once you become like a pretty good comedian, it might actually change around a little bit.
Because people judge you like very intensely.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If you can like get people with the first joke, if you have the confidence and you know what you're doing and stuff, like it's like that, you know, you can like really like just turn the room, get them on your side and just have a good time. And I find like musicians are typically given that freedom from the get-go. Like, you know, even when you're a young band or whatever, people are like, oh, okay, this is all right. But like, if you tell like shit jokes when you're starting out, people are like, what the fuck? Why am I wasting my fucking money on this? You know, whereas like for a band, if you can sing and tune for, you know, most of the time, like people will give you like, you know, $20 here and there.
For sure, for sure. I think there's definitely a connection between music and comedy, and it's just really cool to get to speak to you about all of this, because, you know, not everyone is able to experience both music and comedy in the way that you have.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I've just always been into alternative culture, and I think comedy, like, I mean, it ebbs and flows and stuff, but like comedy is always like an alternative art form. Like even the biggest comedians in the world, like, you know, are super famous to people who pay attention to that sort of stuff. But they're not like famous the way like Brad Pitt's famous, you know, or they're not famous the way fucking Keith Richards is famous. Like, you know, people who know Richard Pryor, but.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of comedians wanting to become actors.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of actors wanting to become comedians.
No, I mean, a lot of people who want to become actors do it. Through, yeah, like they literally, I mean, like Jamie Foxx, I think, was like someone who basically did that, came up through comedy. And like, I mean, that dude's a fucking force to be reckoned with. And like, he's good at fucking everything. I mean, even Eddie Murphy, I guess, is another one. But I don't know what his intentions were. But there are a few people who like, yeah, like they go to LA and they're like, okay, well, how do I get seen by people? Stand-up comedy is a thing. And then as soon as they like get booked their first thing, they're just like, cool, I'm done.
Now I'm an actor. Pay me $10 million a minute.
Yeah, they can dream. And I think the only alternative to that in music is like no one does it on purpose, but it's you start off in a band and then you become a sound engineer.
No,
I mean, that's not just a live sound engineer. I mean, like, you know, you start a recording studio or, you know, like,
yeah.
You become a producer. You become.
I just had the flashback to the standard grumpy sound engineer where they're like so upset with you the moment you walk in, and it's like, just to ask them to do their job is the biggest task in the world.
Yeah, because it's like they're like, no, it sounds good, but it's gonna fill. There was the one guy that used to be at the Winston. I'm not gonna say his name or whatever. This was long, long ago. He was the main sound guy there, and he'd always be like, "Oh, it'll fill out. When once it fills out, it'll wash. It'll sound good." It's like, no, it's good for now. Like this is how it's meant to sound for now. You know, when there's people here, they're gonna absorb it. It's gonna be good. It's like, fair enough. But yeah, like I think the biggest similarity when it comes to music and comedy is the playing to five people thing.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
I mean, everyone's got that experience. But what's it like, when you guys tour, how's the responses usually? Are people there to see you, or is it like, you know, you're jumping on other bills?
Yeah, it's definitely different, you know. For our drummer, right, he just joined the band this year. The shows in Durban were really exciting for him, you know, everyone was there screaming,
yeah, friends,
for Poster
family,
Boy, they all knew who we were.
Can sing along to the songs, they know the lyrics, yeah.
Exactly. And then when we went to play our first show in our first tour show with him, which I think was Joburg, it was a great show. We played at Smoking Kills, but it was an emo night, and we were the only band on the bill with a bunch of DJs.
Okay.
So they were definitely not expecting us, and we had to give a lot more energy and a lot more to the audience in order to get it back from them, you know?
Sure.
But in the shows where the fans know you, you're getting a lot from the audience and it bounces back to them. So it's really just a different exchange of energy and how it works. But definitely, you know, a lot of the shows, aren't always great. We played a show in Jeffrey's Bay, we weren't supposed to play the show. We just randomly got asked to play and we were like, sure thing, we'll play for anyone.
What was this around like the time of the surfing comp and stuff? Or
No, this was in December.
Oh, so okay.
On our way to Cape Town.
So like rage vibes almost. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and we were playing in the backpackers and no one there was expecting us to play or like specifically asked for us to play, but the venue owner did. So we played, and at first everyone was just sitting there at the backpackers reading their books, eating their dinner like they would staying in the backpackers. But
you guys aren't the typical backpacker like band.
Yeah, we're not exactly playing some surf rock covers.
I mean, that's not even it. It's usually just a woman and a guy with guitars, you know, doing their little folk song.
Exactly. But luckily, the bar manager is my friend, so we were in, and you know, at first there was a big shock factor. These people were like, what the hell? I mean, some of them probably haven't even seen a rock band ever.
Sure.
And then like there's me walking up to them and like jumping on their table and Simon screaming in their face. And it can be a lot for these people, but it's really what we love to do. Some of my favorite gigs are not the packed gigs, are the gigs where the people really don't know who we are and aren't expecting like what we can bring. And that's really when I personally bring the most energy to the table, because, you know, I want to give these people an experience that they're going to remember.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the thing. It's about, I get that as well. Like, for me, some of my favorite comedy shows are the ones where like everyone's dying and you're like, I'm going to fucking turn this around. And you do. And it's like, and then the night changes afterwards and everyone like, oh, fucking yeah. You're just like, yeah, I got it. Like, yeah. You know. Like, because like, yeah, you're like, fuck, I'm going to have to actually work. I can't just coast now. Like, it's like, you know, like when the crowd's warm and stuff, it's easy. It just flows. And it's just like, you know, you feel like a king. But like, there's some times where you got to come out and you're going to be like, you're going to fucking enjoy this. Like, I am good at my shit. Like,
my favorite ever show was a show at Rock City in Joburg. The venue was in its dying days. It was a very huge venue that hadn't been getting...
I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah, it hadn't been getting a lot of people coming through.
Where was it?
I don't really know Joburg too well, but it wasn't a very safe area.
I mean, that's Joburg.
And basically, we were playing two gigs in the same night. The second gig was at like 2 a.m. at Smoking Kills.
Nice.
And the first gig was at this Rock City place. And it was a huge venue. Like, you could have easily fitted like 5,000 to 8,000 people in this venue. And there was probably about 20 people watching us like right at the back playing pool. But that was still like by far my favorite ever show, just purely because
I wasn't nervous
at all. Did I ever do where?
Red Door in Maritzburg, because that's what that sounds like.
Unfortunately, I don't think I have.
Okay. But so as you're saying, you weren't nervous.
But yeah, there was no nerves involved. It was like, it was just a really fun experience. And despite not having like people watching us and not getting paid at all because there was a very badly planned show, it was still definitely the funnest show I've ever played. And yeah.
That's crazy. I guess you and Simon must have gotten pretty close at this point, having traveled like so much together, having like done all of this stuff. Like, yeah, how's this been on your guys' relationship? Are there any like, you know, nearly come to fisticuffs sometimes, or is it all love?
I think it's all love, you know. When we first started off, we spent a lot of time together and we got like really close real quick. And with problems that have gone down with drummers leaving us, that's only made mine and Simon's relationship all the stronger.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think I'd be able to do this with anybody else. And I'm just extremely blessed to have such an awesome guy to be doing this with.
Okay, so no tensions.
No tensions. I mean, it gets tough spending so much time together.
Yeah.
Especially me and Simon, because we're always constantly chatting about ideas. And
well, that's dope though.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're in this, because we have such passion about everything involved. But like, after going on tour in December and spending like almost 3 weeks in the same small car driving 6 hours a day, we took the entirety of January pretty much to spend time away from each other.
Fair enough. Have you guys learned the turning your t-shirt inside out trick, you know, so you don't have to wash it? Or no, you're not at that point of touring yet?
We haven't had it that hard just yet.
Well, yeah, you got to turn your boxes inside out, turn your t-shirt inside out. And you're like, yeah, I'm clean now. Like,
yeah, one of our favorite things is just thrift shopping when we go on tour, because like the fashion industry in Durban is, again, not the same as in Joburg and in Cape Town.
Sure.
So yeah, we're always buying like funny pink outfits at thrift stores throughout Joburg and South Africa. And then we'll pretty much just buy those away the same day once. And then what we're doing is we're collecting all these different pink items that we've been wearing at shows. Some of them aren't pink. And we're going to be making a thrift store that's going to be connected to like our merch store that we still at our shows, and you'll be able to buy all the different crazy pink items that we have been wearing over the years.
That's actually pretty smart, and ecologically responsible.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
Okay, so tell me how did this Huck Aubin situation come about? Yes. So before we head on out,
Huck Aubin is actually my dad's best friend.
Oh wow! Okay.
His name is Brandon, and yeah, his sons are my age, so we've always been like very close family friends, and we've always gone to Splashy every year since I was like 1 year old. We've been going with Huck. And I remember when I was about 11 or 12, my dad was staying in accommodation in Underberg, surrounding Splashy. And he was staying at this B&B and he realized that it's owned by this guy named Huck Orban. And he was like, wow, that's strange, you know, strange name. And then he went to a restaurant next door, also owned by a guy named Huck Orban.
Yeah, because he's like the mayor of Underberg.
My dad was like, wow, this guy must own everything. And he went around and apparently the petrol station and like pretty much everything is owned by this guy, Huck Orban. And this is like the first day of Splashy. And my dad arrives at the campsite because he's staying at his hotel with his girlfriend. And I'm there with Brendan. And he tells the story to Brendan. And his eyes just sort of get really big. And this guy is already in a very eccentric character. He already has the mustache. He already loves to dress up.
He was already a character. Yes. He just needed a name.
He just needed the name. And immediately he puts on a crazy pink outfit with like a top hat. And he walks around getting absolutely smash-faced, telling everyone at the whole of Splashy that he is Huck Orban, the mayor of Underberg. And he instantly becomes like a Splashy legend.
So you really have just been like around all of it for so long. Cause I mean, yeah, like Huck's someone who's a, you know, big part of the scene in that. And then like, oh yeah, I guess how did, yeah, like you guys meet up with Peg and that. So you have, you know, him for a long time.
My dad's best friends include Huck and Rafe.
Yeah.
And Rafe is probably the best sound engineer in KZN. He's been in the industry for 25 years and yeah, he's just an amazing sound guy. And because of that, we all went to Splashy every year since we were young. And Rafe was actually always part of the sound team.
Yeah.
So quite often we would camp in like
The nice areas.
The sound, like special departments. And I got to meet all the musicians. I would go backstage. And a few years ago, the company that I work for with my father, which creates clothing, we actually signed a deal with Splashy to create all the merchandise for them for the next like 10 years or so.
Nice.
So I've been running that merchandise store with my brother for, I guess, 7 years now.
Okay.
And yeah, I guess Splashy has always been a very big part of like me and my life. And it's just, it's crazy to see how much has changed over the years.
Yeah. How did it feel to finally play that then?
It was very crazy, you know. I had been building it up for a while in my head and I was very nervous and like I usually wasn't very nervous at gigs at that stage because we've been playing a lot of small shows.
Yeah.
And this was very big.
And there's a lot of people who don't know who the fuck you are there.
Yeah. And it was very different being on such a big stage. Like the actual process of us playing together, it was strange and it was weird. So the whole vibe was just so different that we weren't used to it, but we're excited to potentially come back and put on a better performance this time.
Oh wow, was it not your best?
I would say it was a good performance, but we can always do better, and we do make a point of trying to improve each time we play, whether we're working on the choreography, our outfits, new songs. We always want to bring something special to make sure that each show you come to with Poster Boy is a little bit different and still exciting every time you come.
Sweet. And then with that, I guess we can close out with what's a big mistake you've learned an important lesson from?
Okay, so I guess my biggest mistake was before I joined this band, I didn't do very much. You know, I like to stay at home and play Xbox and...
Hey, I mean, you know.
I lived in Hillcrest with a bunch of other people that didn't get out of Hillcrest.
Yeah, I mean, but living at Hillcrest is... It's not so bad these days, but like, yo, back in the day, like, fuck, there was nothing there.
There was nothing there. And it's a trap. The people, they don't go out of Hillcrest. They just smoke weed and house party. And one of the best things I did was just to stop playing it so safe in my life and take risks and put myself in uncomfortable situations so that I can grow. And yeah, I guess my biggest mistake was not taking any risks and playing it safe.
Fair enough. It's a good thing to learn when you're young. So cool. Well, thank you so much, bro. This has been really fun getting to know you and like, yeah, getting a feel of the temperature of the room, you know, when it comes to Durban music these days. Because I'm still like I'm so much of an outsider these days. Like I'm doing comedy. I'm hanging with my girlfriend. That's kind of it. And then every now and again, I'm like, let's go check out, you know, the youth But, you know, I'm only getting little snapshots. Mm. So, shut, bro.
Just as one final message, you know, we've spoken a bit negatively about the whole Durban scene, but...
I think realistically.
Yeah, realistically. There is definitely a huge potential here. The musicians are amazingly talented. And if we don't try and we don't put the energy in to build it and support local shows, and if the bands don't do everything they can to make this work, then... you know, it is going to die out. So it's important for everyone listening who's interested in the alternative scene to really put that passion somewhere and to make sure that you can either support the local shows or help along your event organizers or bands, because it's difficult out here and we need all the help we can get.
Amen to that. So that was Keegan. Yeah, dope chat. Although, a little depressing to know that, like, I don't know, things have maybe changed for the worse. I was going to say nothing's changed since I started in the scene and that. But with the lack of venues these days, you know, without your Burns, without your Lab, without your Unity 11, without your Winstons, it's definitely fucking harder. Because those gigs, yeah, where you can pop up at a restaurant or at a bar and try and make it into a venue, I think is almost as shit for musicians as it is for comedians. Like, when we do those gigs that, like, are a surprise to the audience there. And, yeah, man, I don't necessarily know the solutions other than, yeah, someone opening a venue, or at least someone who has a venue, actually being dedicated to the live entertainment side of things and treating artists well, booking well, advertising well, and... yeah, I agree with Keegan in that there's definitely space for different clientele in Durban. I think I know for myself, I don't necessarily go out as much because there's just not as many spaces that I fuck with. Like, you know, a lot of them are just generic and boring and don't really offer me or, you know, people similar to me space. And... That sucks, man, because we were lucky, I think, for myself at least, you know, when I was growing up, having Burn and Winston right next door to each other, you know, that shit was fucking foundational. And even when Burn moved down to Wall Street and you had, like, Unity 11 and Live open up around there, like, that was, I mean, you know, I hate being that, like, old nostalgic guy or whatever, but that shit was incredibly influential to me and my life, and I think to many Durbanites around my age and maybe a little younger, maybe a little older, who, yeah, like, we actually every weekend and Wednesday nights and sometimes Thursdays, I used to throw a Carpe Durban on Thursdays at the Winston and that, we would have shit to fucking do as alternative kids, as kids who, yeah, wanted to go watch some rock bands on the weekend. And that doesn't seem to be... Well, I mean, I know it's not. I mean, there's venues and stuff that are, like, booking or that open themselves up to booking. I'm not going to actually mention names or whatever. But, like, I know personally, even lately, when I've tried to do events with various places and that, it's like, yeah, you can have the space, but then you've got to bring in your own sound and do your own marketing and this and that. And it's like, are we not partners in this thing? Do you not also want people to come? Why must it be all on the fucking bands? You know, why must it be all on the artists or the promoters or whatever to do all the fucking work? Like, I think that should be a little bit more of a collaboration, you know? Because, yeah, when you look at places like Smoking Kills in Joburg, it's tragic, you know, when you look at what's happening in Durban, because, you know, they seem to have a pretty dope booking philosophy. I've been there many times now. It's one of my favorite places in Joburg, and, you know, I've gone there for, what was it, Mistaken for Magic with Rhee and Coco from Brought in a New Sound. I've been there on a Sunday night and watched a random fucking jazz band. You know, I even saw the Poster Boy guys there once when I was, I think last year, early last year maybe. Like, I can't remember. I think that was actually for the Mistaken for Magic gig. And they were in Joburg and saw them there and we chatted on that. But that's the thing. We just don't have that communal hub anymore. And I don't think, like, there's really anyone that I see trying to create that. Like, not, well, at least not on the level that I would like to see it. But yeah, we'll see how things go. I mean, I would love to have my own venue, but unfortunately, I don't come from money and I didn't invest in any tech stocks like when I was young enough. So yeah, that's still a fucking pipe dream. And if anyone would like to fund it, I am pretty good at running events and booking and advertising and doing all those things. So, you know, if you got a few shekels spare there, let's chat. That's all for now, people. I'm going to head on out, which means it's time for the shoutouts. Oh, wait, before the shoutouts, my birthday is on Wednesday, 21 February. We're doing the Not Quite Right open mic. I'm hosting it. Come on through to Ace's Pizza. It's only 40 rand. Okay, now that that's out the way, it's time for the shoutouts. Every week, we give shoutouts to the titular titles tier over at patreon.com. It's a top tier, it's a $10 tier, and you get to pick your title. So shoutouts to Rousseau, the storage clerk of subtle heresies in the Lesser Overberg region. Russell Grant, the Far East correspondent. Neil Green, the key grip. Karan Chetty, the assistant to the regional manager. Kath Jenkin, the inevitable ruler of the universe and Queen Swifty. And Stephen Olafia, the executive producer. As always, a big thank you to Damien Root for the bed music you hear under my dulcet tones and the banging intro you hear each and every single week. Also, go check out his band when you see them performing. I haven't seen them on a lineup for quite a while now, but check out Hoema when you get the chance. If you ever seen them on a poster, trust me, go check them out. And lastly, but not leastly, shout out to you. I will catch you on the flip side.